This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh boy.
Whoopsie. I'm Peter McNerney.
Look out. Here we come. I'm Beth Newell.
Heads up.
Go it's long. It's a podcast.
I'm open. And we got kids. Mavens. Boy, she's almost three. May 1st, she turns three. And Bryn.
Did you just find that out?
I just found that out. Well, my brain reminded me.
There's been a lot of calendar talk around here with the two of them lately.
Oh, yeah. April Fool's Day. That was a big one for Bryn.
Yeah, I don't think he understands what it means, though.
I explained it to him, but he was more wrapped up in the numbers than the concept of jokes.
Yeah. If you want to see our son sing about April 1, you can go to my Instagram once again. And if you want to see our kids lie and try to make up a story for why they defaced a calendar, you can also go to my Instagram. Did we already talk about that one?
We may have.
I think we did. Yeah, so what's going on this week?
Okay, so let's start with today, shall we?
Yes.
Maven's sick.
Not
terrible. She's all day sort of at 100.3, which is not technically a fever, but it's enough for her to be a groggy. And I definitely have whatever she has.
I think I had what she had, but I think she's still in an age where she gets a much more extreme case of something. So I don't think it was like a bad sickness for me.
Yeah. No, I have it right now and it's just like sleepy.
Well, you did what is so hard for me to wrap my head around, which because of the fact that it happens all the time, which is that anytime I mention that I'm feeling sick or someone else in our family is sick, you immediately say that you are also sick. And what you did today when I told you that me and Maven both had this like stomach bug thing, you immediately said, oh yeah, I have that. I actually have been sick for the last week. I've had that, something like that every day.
Do you know why? Well, one, I want all the attention too. But I'm
we know that's why.
Yeah, but I'm also
me and my mom friends talk about this all the time. Every single husband is just what is we've discussed on the podcast before, I believe, is called a man cold. It's when a man gets a cold and it's so much stronger apparently than anyone else's cold ever has been.
No. I mean, that is a thing. I won't deny it, but here's the thing. I am so hesitant to complain about feeling bad because of this. And so I don't say anything. And it's always until other people are sick, and then I'm like, oh, me too. And just so you know that I want to complain all the time, and I'm really holding back because of what you described. I listen. I'm perfect. I change.
There still is, though, within you a constant drive to share every discomfort.
No, there's a drive in me to share everything. Period.
Yeah, I guess so. But the man cold is a phenomenon that is happening.
I won't deny it. I won't fight that. I'm aware. I actively push against that. And I used to, I don't know if you've noticed, but I used to say way more often, I feel crappy. I feel bad for me.
Yeah.
And I try to save it. And I need validation. So here's a transition into oversharing. Have you noticed that Bryn is going like, he seems to be going like a million miles an hour a lot of the time?
Well, I think at certain moments, like when he wakes up in the morning, he's ready to go. When he gets home from school, he's like, hey, what's up? Let me tell you what's going on. Like, he's just...
Daddy, this...
It's not always, but it is at certain, like, key transitions.
I feed into it. I mean, I love it. I'm feeding it.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not exhausted when it's happening, it's like very funny.
So he came home today and I had taken a nap with Maven and you came home, woke us up, and I was like so groggy and I couldn't wake up. And Bryn was going, bada, bada, bada. And I had a moment of just like, get away from me, which doesn't happen very often. I was like, I can't process that.
That's how I feel with him in the morning, sort of. Yeah. Like, not always, but I am like, please. Because I think the thing is sometimes it's not even that I'm super tired. It's just that I'm just not tired enough that once he does that, it's like, oh, great, I'm awake for the day. That was like an hour of sleep that I'm never going to get back.
It's the in-between. I don't know which way I'm going, so I can't process any of this. Yep. But it did make me feel... Two things happened this week that made me think, that felt like things you have described how you feel. Because you absorb everything, you consider everything. And so when people throw too much at you, it becomes overwhelming. Whereas I just let shit pass through me. And it took me a long time to understand that it's harder for you. And so that was one where Bryn was talking to me. I'm like, I can't do this right now, where I feel like this must be how I make Beth feel sometimes.
All the time.
All sometimes. And last week I also got this weird gig for promoting a candy brand in a pop-up shop where people are coming in, and it was a Reese's swap shop. So people came in and like gave me whatever they had except for money, and I would give them this unreleased special candy. And so I was playing a big weird character, and it was 2 days, full work day of almost 0 seconds not engaging with people. And so people would come in, I'm immediately like, hey, welcome to this weird shop, I'm funny improviser, what are you doing?
That's like my nightmare.
It went surprisingly fast, and it was surprisingly fun. But as soon as it was done and I got to the train, I suddenly realized how insane I felt. And I couldn't sleep because my brain was still just going, are you helping people? Is everything...
You got home after the second day of that, you were acting weird in a way that is reminding me of me. It was like agitated, like just clearly overloaded.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I don't know what it's like to be you, but it checked a lot of boxes for things you have described to me.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about it is, like, for me, it's the volume of like sensory input and people. Like, I just have a lower threshold, and it's not, I'm not specifically annoyed with any given person. Like, it's not the person's behavior that's bothering me. It's just that at a certain point in the week, as a parent and someone who has to like commute into New York City half the time, it's like, I am just physically overloaded.
Yeah, boy, I think there's going to be some tension between you and Bryn when he's like 12 And he's on mode, and he's not as cute.
Well, I've noticed one thing that worries me is because I do think we might be in sort of a magical time in terms of how well our kids get along. Like, I am worried that at some age is going to tip and get into, like, that kid bickering zone that, like, all kids go through.
Oh, they can do it now. They can,
but the frequency is actually not that bad if you think about it.
Yeah. That relationship is so different than it was not that long ago, and I think it's going to continue to take these big unexpected turns.
Yeah, and I think it'll probably just keep, like, some of those things swing back and forth over the years.
I think it's going to land in a great place. In 14 years.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes along the way. So I was home with Maven all day. It's like, it was half great and half terrible. You're trying to do work. And they are capable of making it literally impossible to get anything done.
Well, that's the other thing about my sensory input is like, when I can get nothing done when I'm home here with them, and then they make it harder because they just want to, like, hang on me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got out of here for a while. You were working. You got some work done.
Well, she had a really good nap, and that's when I got a ton of work done. But before that, it was very stop and go. If I've got sort of like data type, don't need to think type work, I can do that with kids around. But if I have to write emails and actually think about what I'm saying,
that's the
it's
thing.
It's a disaster.
Well, I think
I'm sure that's why. Part of why it's so hard for you.
I think that's also why I'm so sensitive to the sensory overload thing, is because there are things I can get done in my day. Like, I can do invoices and stuff for the business, but that's not the majority of the work I have to do. It's, like, creative and has to require, like, pretty decent amount of attention and enthusiasm.
This makes a lot of sense, partly because of our personalities, but I have a ton of that. I just need to put a puzzle together of, like, logistics.
Yeah.
And I can stop and pick up wherever I am. But then we had a lot of really wonderful daddy-daughter TV cuddle time.
Yeah.
And she wasn't sick where I was worried about her. But she was sick enough where she'd come and just, like, want hugs. And I'm like, I'll spend all day doing this.
Yeah, she was being really cute. When I came home, she's been doing this thing last night and tonight where she wants to be, like, attached to me. So it's like having a baby again, where if I'm trying to pour myself a glass of water or something, I have to do one-handed because I have, like, a almost 3-year-old on top of me.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, sort of adorable because I know it's, like, temporary to this day, but it really makes me not miss having a baby in a way, you know?
Boy, and so in terms of, so tomorrow I have to go into the city at least for the morning. So you're going to, if she doesn't go to school, you'll be with her and you'll have to, it'll get less cute as you have to get more done.
Well, I find it makes me less crazy if I am able to admit to myself that there's just not going to be work done at certain points.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm making even the smallest attempt to get something done, it will make me enraged.
Oh, yeah. Expectations is everything. The second I'm like, ooh, maybe I can do a little of that, everything drives me crazy.
Or, like, sometimes, like, you know, I can clean and do, like, you know, organizational things like laundry around them. That's fine. But then if I get too, like, into cleaning, they will at some point be, like, attached to me and, you know, need to intervene.
Folding laundry with kids around is my favorite time to do it.
We love laundry. This is a fascinating topic.
Oh, gosh.
Send us your thoughts on laundry.
Bryn continues his skating lessons.
Oh, yeah. Skating lessons. So he's getting better. I didn't go with you.
I went. He literally fell down 2 times, which is better than the 23 times he fell down the week before.
Yeah.
I was very proud. He also, I have noticed, he does not have a competitive spirit out there.
Yeah.
He's the last one across, and no part of him seems to be fazed by the fact that he's last. I don't think he even processes that.
Well, he's exactly like you in that he thinks he's performing the act of skating for an audience.
That was, you know what? That's the way to do sports. It's a performance. Because you know what? No joke. That's what sports is. It's theater. It's drama. If you pick,
just admit it, everyone.
If you pick a team that you decide, I want this team to win, then suddenly every moment is a yes, 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 or a no, no, no. And that's the same experience as watching a play where you're invested in characters. And they're getting what they want. Yes, are they not? Oh, no. It's high drama.
Sports is just a soap opera, you guys.
It literally is. And if you're playing it, if you just know that you're an actor and you're performing, boy, it's fun. And who cares if you lose?
You know, anything can be interesting to anyone. It just is really random what will strike your fancy sometimes. And sports is not that interesting to me these days.
Boy, I do like sports, but I have to be surrounded by people that care about it more than
I do. If I'm surrounded by people that care, I can get kind of into it, like for a day or whatever. I just don't have the energy to do it on my own, which is the same with you. You never watch anything.
My phone keeps telling me that the Cubs game is starting, and I was like, I don't have that package on the TV. Why is the Apple TV sending me push notifications? Because I think just I had to tell it that I was a Cubs fan.
So anyway, I think we should just get our kids into dance.
I'm behind that.
That's what I think would be fun for me as a participant, like as a parent who has to drop off, is being like, oh, that's a cool thing you learned how to do. Like, that would impress me because I don't have dancing ability.
Yeah, you do. Your dancing's the best. It's weird and it's great.
I mean, it's fine. I think it can be funny to watch, but I don't have any learned skills in terms of dancing.
Sure,
you know what
sure.
I mean?
We'll make them do both. I asked Maven if she wants to skate when she's older, and she very enthusiastically said yes.
She said yes to skating?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she would like it.
Let's do it. And now it's time for Did You Know's? This is where we share some parenting article or something we've learned. And guess what, guys? This is the third time we have recorded this segment because the first time the whole thing crashed.
Yeah, excuse us while we speed through this after we just gave it a very thoughtful, long discussion that you will never hear.
Second time, I wasn't recording both of us.
Okay, so I want to talk about an article from Oprah Magazine. It's called Women Aren't Nags, We're Just Fed Up. And the subtitle of this article is, hold on, let me pull this up again.
I'm ready to say the thing I've already said twice after you say it.
The subtitle of this article is Emotional Labor is the Unpaid Job Men Still Don't Understand. So to get to the point of that, actually, I would love to have you describe what you think emotional labor is.
Oh, you just flipped the script? This is not what we did the last two times.
I'm switching the whole discussion. There's a fresh talk you've never heard before.
Okay, here's emotional labor as I understand it. I'm going to attack it from a very male point of view, which is what I typically see when there's a problem, a task at hand. I see the immediate A to B, like what's the thing I need to literally do right now? And for a lot of things, like for the example in this article, getting a cleaning service, just doing that is not the task. It is also the figuring out what the need is, how it fits into our schedule in our lives, doing the research to figure out what the options are, getting advice from other people to make sure that you have a solution.
Looking into the cost, the quality,
the
terms.
The holistic, solving the problem and thinking about it, how it affects all the people in your life and feeling, looking out for everybody. And so it's all, to a lot of men, it's the invisible work that goes into a seemingly A to B task.
Yeah, and I think because men are conditioned not to worry about those things, the breadth of what they don't understand women are doing on a daily basis is sometimes enormous.
Mm-hmm.
I think also, you know, men have a resistance to participating in emotional labor, and so they often belittle it when women do it as if that's the reason why they don't participate in it, even as they continuously benefit from it.
Yeah, it's that like, well, why are you being so emotional? This is not a difficult thing. Just make a choice.
Yeah. So I wanted to read some quotes from the article. She has this sentence, even having a conversation about the imbalance of emotional labor becomes emotional labor. It gets to a point where I have to weigh the benefits of getting my husband to understand my frustration against the compounded emotional labor of doing so in a way that won't end in us fighting. Usually, I let it slide, reminding myself that I'm lucky to have a partner who willingly complies to any task I decide to assign him. So, yeah, we've talked about this in the last two times we recorded this segment. It's just you, when you read this title of this article, you immediately feel resistant.
Yeah. You know, I think when I read this article, I really connected to it when it just started going through the list of here's the, technically how this plays out and all the ways that it affects a person. And that's like how I could connect with it, which is details. But when,
right.
when I hear I things like that, you benefit from systemic emotional labor, and I'm like, I can't react to a theme,
Well, I think this is what
concrete details.
Okay, so this is what, like, the title of this, Women Aren't Nags, We're Just Fed Up, like, that feels inflammatory to you. And then women, I think this is something that happens to a lot of oppressed groups, women, people of color, queer people, et cetera. They have to present things in such a calm manner and with all of these factual details in a moment where they are feeling very frustrated. Mm-hmm. And then that becomes more emotional labor to have to police the emotions of the person who's oppressing you in that moment. And I know me saying the word oppressing just threw you up into a defensive mode, but it is like this person who refuses to acknowledge that they're walking over you in a certain way. And when you try to reverse course on that.
Sure. And I say the defensive thing, not to say that I'm disagreeing with this, but to acknowledge the defensive emotional reaction I have before I'm able to parse through the logic.
And I do think that's very typical and relatable as a member of a privileged group, like as a white person, as a straight person, as a cis person. Like, you, if someone is telling you, like, hey, you haven't noticed for your whole life that this thing benefits you or this thing that you participate in hurts us,
it makes you feel stupid.
You want to, it makes you feel dumb, and you don't want to believe that you've been hurting people or enabled something that was hurting people. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's anyone's natural reaction. But I do think as a woman, having had these discussions over the last few years as they've become much more prominent in our culture, I have been on the flip side of it so many times that I am now much better at moderating my behavior towards other people who are raising those concerns.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I've learned to... I like to acknowledge to myself, you're having an emotional reaction about before you've gotten into it. And this can be the thing that stops people from listening to the important information afterwards, which is, here's how this tangibly exists. Here's how you can learn from it and recognize it in the future. And needing to be able to, as lightly and quickly as you can, get through your emotional reaction so that you're still open to hearing a concrete lesson.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think it's like a matter of taking a beat to process the emotion and to take responsibility for the emotion as yours and not something the other person is doing to you.
Can I admit something to you?
What?
It's a big secret that I've felt irrationally guilty about. All right. So get through the first part, you'll have an emotional reaction, and then hear that it's a very thoughtful thing that I've done. So I'm like very off social media, right? Uh-huh. And I don't fully process the things that are there, and blah, blah, blah. So I don't follow anyone on Twitter, but I follow you. But boy, here's what I've done. I've muted you on Twitter.
Okay.
Because, and the other part of it is, I then deliberately, probably every other day, at least once a week, will go to your Twitter page and read all of yours, because you retweet a lot of things that are potentially, I have a big emotional reaction to, that are articles like this. And if it's just in my Twitter feed, I probably am just scrolling past it, and all I'm taking from it is a defensive feeling. And there are actually some really thoughtful things, and I learn a lot from your Twitter feed. And so I know that when I go there, I have to go there to take the time to read the articles and actually think about what you're doing. And I can't do that when I'm clicking on Twitter just because I'm like on the train.
Oh, that's interesting. Because, well, I guess, I mean, because that's my Twitter, that is sort of my mode of being on Twitter, where a lot of the people I follow, I feel like are speaking to these kinds of issues or, you know, sometimes doing it in a humorous way because I follow a lot of comedians. But I feel like when I'm on Twitter, I'm in a mode of consuming that information and trying to make judgments about where I stand on certain issues. Like, that's how I interact with Twitter.
Yeah, and I can't do it. Like, I either have to take the time to digest what you're putting out there, but chances are if I click on Twitter, I'm just like procrastinating.
Well, I think I do feel a need to, like, because there's so much noise on Twitter, and I'm not a journalist or someone who is giving you like a general source of information. Like, I'm not on there enough to be a reliable source of like, this big thing just happened in the news. If I'm going to add to the noise, I feel like I have to be amplifying a message that I think is sort of underrepresented.
Yeah.
And therefore, 100%. I think I can see why if you're taking in that, it might be sort of catching you off guard more often than not, because it's sort of, I try to make it new information, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I was just getting stressed. And there's people like that, and so but it's also, I'm like, this is important information, and I'm not doing it justice by just flipping past it and just being emotional about it.
So
I've been doing that for like a month, and I was like, I feel like I'm keeping a secret from you.
Wow. No, I think that's interesting. It's funny.
Yeah.
What do you remember now that you've like sat with my tweets? Anything specific that stuck with you?
Oh no, I knew you were gonna put me on the spot.
Okay,
I couldn't tell
it's
you a
fine.
Single thing.
Okay, I mean,
I just know that I'm more thoughtfully engaging in your social media than I was before when I saw it every day.
It's at first I thought you were just gonna say you flat out muted me, and I was like, wow, I didn't know I was that triggering.
Right, that's what it felt like when I heard the article of this, the title of this article.
I thought you were gonna be mad about specific things I said about my life and not just like random articles.
Oh, no, well,
articles.
I still don't love when it's clearly a dig on me.
I don't dig on you.
No, I mean, there's indirect jokes that I make about me, but I'm over that. All right. There's a few, because we've recorded this three times, there's a couple little things I'm going to randomly jump to that I want to repeat.
Okay.
Which is, can we just talk about how great our cookbook is?
Yeah, Kate Spencer, who actually, she hosts the podcast called Forever 35, which is, I believe started as about skincare, but maybe it's now about more than that. Sorry, I haven't listened lately.
Now it's about life care.
Kate Spencer is in my mom group. She recommended this book that I believe is just called Simple Recipes, and it's by like America's Test Kitchen or something like that.
That sounds accurate-ish.
It sounds about right. So I purchased this book based on the fact that it was very simple recipes, which, as you know, is as much as we are currently capable of on a regular basis. Like, in the absence of a good simple cookbook, we are literally just throwing olive oil on things and shoving them in the oven. You know what I mean?
That's all it takes.
But this cookbook is great because it goes like at least one or two steps beyond that, but not crazy hard. And you've been using it a lot more than I have.
So this is a great example of this article, too. So as I said before in a previous thing, that I read this article and it painted a picture of this husband that was not aware of the emotional labor. And I was like, I am very much connecting to this. I think that I have evolved past where this person is, but very much recognize this attitude of like, let me just do the, I'll solve the problem with this one thing I haven't thought about. So I'm far more involved and I take care of a lot of things, and I try to convince myself that I'm doing everything. And over time, what I've realized is, oh, I think I'm doing 80%. And then I'm slowly just realizing that the pie is much larger than I was aware of.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that she speaks to in the article, is just feeling like she doesn't get to complain about this because her husband's like one of the good ones or whatever, which I very much related to. It's just like, you do a lot compared to most men your age, but
there's still things I'm not aware of.
Still a lot there, you know?
So for example, I have been cooking way more, and we said this before, but I've been cooking a lot more meals than you come home to, and that's one of the most openly appreciative things that you've shown me, because you love this.
But, and the big evolution for me is, like, it's not just that I came home and you cooked, like, mac and cheese or a piece of chicken, but you've cooked, like, a meal that has multiple food groups and feels like relatively nutritious in terms, and is like edible to our children. It's hard to strike that balance.
I've thought about all the people and I've thought about all the pieces.
Well, thanks to this cookbook, which I think has...
Which I never would have had if you hadn't thought of it first and you hadn't given me a tool. And now I'm like giving myself a trophy when really the emotional labor started with you, and I don't always recognize that because I'm too worried. I'm too busy congratulating myself for completing the immediate task.
Right. And I think also me getting this book is not just that it's a great recommendation, but that I have spent a lot of years thinking about how to find recipes that are not impossible to make when I have like 20 minutes to cook my kids' dinner while they hang on me, you know?
Yeah. And now, Beth, we're going to end this section for the third time very abruptly because it hasn't crashed, and I'm going to stop and save, and then I'm going to kiss you on the lips.
April Fools, we never kiss.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step, and you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question is going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun, and I can't wait for you to hear it.
Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This segment is called Would You Knows. It's where we present each other with hypothetical parenting obstacles.
Obstacles, impossible scenarios. Beth, We haven't done one in a long time where we wouldn't make one up for each other.
Yeah, and I think the ones from our listeners were maybe agitating people because I'm not a good listener to those hypotheticals.
Because you hate fun and science fiction.
I think I like fun.
So here's a very weird one that I literally just thought of that I'm going to sort out as I present it. Okay, Bryn is 13. You somehow find out that for years, Bryn has been lying to all his friends about you.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He's been telling everybody that you are like this super secret Hollywood ghostwriter. And
wow.
That all these big movies, when they aren't going great, the studio, they comes to you and they pay you all this money and they say, you need to fix our screenplay. But only secretly.
We'll never credit you.
Union rules.
You're a woman. You're not allowed to have your name on the movie, you
listen,
idiot.
I don't know how the union works.
This is like actually literally how Hollywood works.
Yeah, well, so you are getting all this money and you are responsible for the last like six of the last 10 Best Picture movies, but you're not allowed to talk about it. And everyone at Bryn's school thinks you are the coolest because of this thing.
Can I actually just interrupt and say that there's like a rumor / theory that George Lucas's wife wrote most of the first three Star Wars and then they divorced and she was no longer helping him in an uncredited way and that's why all those movies got terrible?
Well, George Lucas only wrote the first Star Wars. He didn't write the second and third. So your theory has fallen apart.
I think there is an article about this. And so, yes, maybe I'm recalling the number of movies in the article incorrectly, but this was not a completely made-up claim.
I don't think that's insane at all. I think he's a terrible writer, but I'd also argue that the first Star Wars is not a super...
Okay, well, you're now...
Getting nerdy?
Making inferences about which movie it was in a way that I no longer care to figure out.
You literally asked for this. Anyway, I'm going to look that up.
So in this hypothetical, Bryn is, he's been telling people I am doing this thing.
That you're like the greatest screenwriter that no one ever knows about.
It's just weird because, like, in my mind, by the time Bryn is 13, I'm already writing things like that. So either he's telling kids things that I actually am doing, and
you are writing. You're working. You have some movies. You have some stuff. But you're not. You know,
I'm not ghostwriting the way I want to be.
You're not known as the greatest writer of our generation.
Secretly behind the scenes.
Yeah. The things you're writing are not cool to 13-year-olds.
I just again want to say as a total side note is that there are a lot of women writing movies or co-writing them where you never really hear their names because no one cares to talk about it, but they are very big, well-known movies. Like, Emma Thompson's written a lot of movies. Like,
oh, yeah. She's like, Pride and Prejudice. Didn't she direct all that?
I believe so. I'm not as familiar with the movie as I am the BBC miniseries,
well,
which
that's
I'm
what
obsessed
I meant, the miniseries,
but,
right? Didn't she do that?
No, she wrote the movie Sense and Sensibility based on a Jane Austen novel. But anyway, I could just talk about Emma Thompson all night. But
now it's time for Would You Like to Talk About Emma Thompson?
True to form, not answering the hypothetical question.
Okay, so the quandary is, your son is a liar, but his lie makes you look so cool within your local community.
I think
community.
The thing is, I'm just like, this hypothetical is strange in terms of the logistics of it, and I guess I'm just not... I'm so much more concerned with where my career is actually at when Bryn is 13 that it's hard for me to think about... his opinion of it. Like, that doesn't factor in to me. Like,
well, it's the question is, Do you get mad at him for lying, and do you correct the lie?
I think it's kind of a funny lie that's not, like, super offensive. Like, he's just like, hey, my mom's cool. Like, a little cooler at this thing that she does. Like, I don't think that's that weird.
I'm not saying that that's weird. That it's the...
I wouldn't be upset by it, I don't think.
Would you tell him you have to tell the truth?
I mean, it's more like something I would, like, kindly correct to his friends, like, and be like, no, that's not true.
But he's been doing it for 5 years, so suddenly they're all like, Bryn is a weird liar.
But I think my reaction would be like, Bryn, come on. Like, I wouldn't be, like, angry. I would just be like...
Well, now, but what have you done to his reputation with his friends? Where they're like,
I don't care. The only
thing we know about you... you know, Miss Newell.
If you can't make a kid own a lie at 13, like, how is he going to handle the pressures of the actual world ever? Like,
I'm not saying I disagree with
you. I'm not going to back him up on a lie about me.
I just want you to unpack all the implications of this choice, which is now his friends are like, well, now we can't trust you because you've been lying about this thing for years. And it's a very deliberate lie. It's not even an, you know... I would too. I wouldn't go out of my way to be like, you got to go tell your friends. But if one of his friends was like, hey, I heard your wife wrote Moonlight. I'd be like, no, she did not write Moonlight.
Just from my imagination. Never had the experience of being a queer black man, but I just tapped into it somehow.
That's what's so impressive about your skill is that you inhabit the characters, even if you've never had these life experiences. She also wrote Endgame. It's the Avengers movie that's coming up.
Endgame. Like, I know what that is.
You're going to know. You didn't. What if I said Infinity War? You would know what that is.
If there's any... like, of those current movies that you stand a chance of getting me to watch.
Yeah.
It is the ones directed by Taika Waititi, who I love. And that's currently the only thing that I find mildly fascinating about that type of movie.
Well, you also like Guardians of the Galaxy because you love Chris Pratt.
Yeah, but there's some rumors about Chris Pratt these days that are, like, not...
ruining it for you?
I can't get into it anymore. It's not, like... He was a fun actor, and now he's, like, being kind of Christian and, like...
That's what's offensive about
him? No, it's not just that. It's, like, he's part of a church that doesn't like queer people, and he's one of those people who's clearly, like, vaguely conservative, but he's not really
open
about it. Yeah, he's not even owning it, and it's just, like... There's some other cheating rumors, which may or may not be true, who knows, but, I mean, those kind of rumors swirl around anyone who gets divorced who's a celebrity, so it's...
All right, well, what about the new Captain Marvel movie that's directed by a duo, man-woman? Is that intriguing to you at all?
Well, that for me, like, always feels like a little bit of a trap because they're like, oh, we wouldn't let a woman write or direct something alone, so we had to pair her with a man who will make sure she doesn't screw it up and make it too girly. And then they sort of, like, suck all the woman out of the movie.
Well, this is a duo that's directed a lot of stuff together.
Okay, but in my experience, a lot of times I see that happen is like, we made a movie about a woman and there's women involved in making it and it's going to be so woman, but it's clearly just men saying that. And then this woman is like, yep, what's feminist is to see a woman punching people. That's the most feminist thing that could ever happen.
Sure. I think Marvel's slate ahead, like the Black Widow movies coming up, is all women written, directed, and all that. And that's a huge part of why Black
I'm happy for Black those Panther. Women. I'm happy they're getting work. I just sometimes question the circumstances around how they're getting work.
Sure. That's valid. I'm not going to try to make you watch these movies, but...
It's better than if there was no woman involved. I will acknowledge that.
Women is better than no women.
Yeah. I would just say, like, when men get jobs, they're afforded a lot more creative control.
So you would correct the lie... That you secretly wrote Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, because I don't even know what it is.
It's coming out in less than a month, and I'm very excited about it.
I feel confident that when Bryn is 13 years old, I will still not know what that movie is. I will have completely forgotten this conversation.
Beth, it's the culmination of 11 years of films. Ugh, it's the big one. I'm very excited about it.
it's not fun for me unless I can imagine Taika Waititi directing it and being handsome behind the scenes.
Oh boy, he's very handsome.
He's very adorable.
He's going to be in the new Star Wars TV show. You don't care.
He's cast on it?
He's the voice of one of the droids.
Just the voice?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
let's just watch Thor Ragnarok after this, okay?
You know what's so funny about him just being the voice is I was reading an interview with him this week, and yeah. He said that he could have been in the TV adaptation of the What We Do in the Shadows. Is that what
we
it's
do
called?
In Shadows, yeah.
Yeah. So he was asked to star in it, and they ultimately decided not to star in it, mainly because he doesn't like to wear makeup. And I have never really related to something so strongly. I was like, I get it. Like whenever I have to do an on-camera thing, as you know, I'm a very sensitive person. It's like the makeup like irritates my face.
Yeah.
I don't love performing enough to get over that those kind of humps.
It's like in Thor Ragnarok, he's Korg, who's a giant rock man. He's just the voice. He's the best character in the movie. Did you see that movie?
No.
Oh, Beth, you'd love it. It's so silly. And this has been Would You Know's Marvel Movies.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
This next segment is called Listeners Want to Knows. It's where we take some questions and comments from you guys, our listeners.
All right, because we've recorded a section of this podcast three times in a row, we're going to do a short one here, because, boy, we got to go to bed.
We can't stop complaining about our own mistake of
we didn't need
not
to tell
recording.
You about it, but we're telling you about it. I want a trophy for how... Never mind. There's another email about scissors. We've been talking a lot about scissors recently. Hi, Beth and Peter. I am the mom of three boys, ages 10, 8, and 6. Love the pod, especially as it reminds me of how far we have come in the last few years. You're welcome. Just wanted to make a suggestion regarding scissors. When my 6-year-old was in daycare /pre-K, they would occasionally fill a media table with scraps of paper, or around the holidays, scraps of wrapping paper, and let the kids cut until it was confetti. The kids loved it. And it was great practice holding and using scissors. At that age, our son would hold the scissors in either hand, just like Bryn, and he is still somewhat ambidextrous. My suggestion is to take a big toy bin or something and fill it with newspapers, recycling papers, old wrapping paper, or whatever, and then get two pairs of safety scissors and just let the kids go nuts. Make a game out of it, out of making sure the paper doesn't go out of the bin. And boom! Hours of free, clean, and quote-unquote educational entertainment.
Hmm.
True story. when we had cutting paper in the media table at my son's daycare, I would ask him what he did that day, and he would say, I cut paper. I would ask, what else? Answer, nothing much. Teacher confirmed, he really loved cutting the paper. Thanks for your candid and enjoyable tales of parenting to littles, Jenna.
That's interesting. It's kind of reminds me of what I was saying about the skating lessons last week, where it's just he needs to be on the ice a certain amount of time to get better, and there's really no coaching that needs to happen. He just needs to be exposed.
Yeah.
And that makes sense with this. I do think like he's been kind of resistant to cutting because it's been such a performance right now with you like testing him on his cutting.
Yeah, I did it wrong because I put it in the same format they do at daycare or at pre-K.
Yeah.
He cut the first line and then he got to the squiggly one and immediately said, well, Miss Myra said I can just do a straight line if I can't do it. So I decided he couldn't do it. And a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. You know, as the anal person I am, I don't love the idea of having a bin full of cut up paper for our kids to immediately dump out, which they will do.
They will do.
And I don't think Bryn would enjoy the game of keeping it over the bin when he could make a huge mess, as he loves to do.
When he figures out it can be pretend snow.
As you know, who came home to a peanut butter covered couch last night.
And a clay covered wall.
He got clay on the wall and... I wasn't able to clean it up because I was trying to leave his room and get him to go to sleep.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Did you clean that up?
Nope, but I cleaned the peanut butter up.
I was thinking we probably need to get the magic eraser out.
Oh, okay. Here's a tip. If you haven't already gotten on board with Mr. Clean Magic Eraser sponges, they're literally magic. And I don't believe in magic, and they're literally magic.
Magic eraser is the kind of household cleaning thing that men love, like
because it works now.
Well, because it feels like you're part of a trick, like you're like, look what I've got,
look this. How good I am at cleaning.
Yeah.
Hey, it makes me want to clean. Stop complaining.
Yeah, anyway,
Jenna, that's good advice. I'm gonna try it.
Yeah, we should definitely leave more paper and scissors out on the table. As dangerous as that sounds.
Let's leave the big ones so they can learn all the lessons about scissors. Safety, what am I talking about? Forget.
I don't know what you're saying.
No, neither do I.
You're making a joke about our kids getting hurt?
Yeah, I think I was, but I didn't think it through and it wasn't funny and I hate it.
Anyways, guys, getting late here
sick day.
The McNerney Newell household. Thank you guys for tuning in.
This has been Listeners Wanna Knows. This has been another episode of We Knows Parenting. Come to our live show, why don't you? In Brooklyn, April 23rd. Please go to weknowsparenting.com. There's a link for live appearances. Click on that. Find the ticket link. Get yourself a ticket. Abby Crutchfield, Ophira Eisenberg, Chuck Bryant.
Yeah,
they're all going to be there.
We're all going to be there talking kids.
Talking kids, talking parents, talking life. Am I right?
If you would like to submit a question, share a story, give some advice, or suggest a parenting hypothetical to us, you can email us at weknowspod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 347-384-7396.
Find us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, at weknowspod, and on the Facebook, wherever that is that we are. And you know what? That's it. We did it, Beth.
Amen.
Amen. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God.
Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.